On a Friday, May 31st, it's Idaho Matters. I'm George Prentiss in for Gemma Gaudette, and we'll start things off with our reporter roundtable when we get you up to date on all the news that made headlines this week. Joining us live in studio are Kevin Richard with Idaho Education News and Betsy Russell with Idaho Press and Melissa Davlin with Idaho Public Television. Welcome all.
Hello.
Hello there.
Betsy, let's talk about some breaking news. The former chair of the Idaho GOP is in a bit of hot water today.
Correct. Jonathan Parker, former state Republican Party chairman, has been arrested on felony charges of stalking. There are not a lot of details yet. He and his wife, who have at least one small child, recently divorced.
Mm-hmm. It's my understanding. I think he spent the evening behind bars and was scheduled to be arraigned today.
I believe that's correct. The mugshot has been released, mm-hmm. showing him in orange jail garb.
There's probably a fair amount of speculation out there, but indeed that is just speculation. And we'll find out maybe a little bit more in the arraignment. But this is a fluid story.
I agree. And when Parker stepped down as state party chair, he cited his family obligations and wanting to spend time with his family, and particularly in being a father, as his reason for stepping away from his duties with the party.
And again, the charge is a stalking charge.
It is.
Okay. Kevin, U.S. Senators Mike Crapo and Jim Risch were in Boise yesterday. They stood in front of the State House. They were framed by a school bus.
Yes.
And the news concerned aid to rural counties.
Well, yeah, this is an ongoing issue for counties and schools in timber country, not just in Idaho, but across the country. There's since 2000, the federal government has provided about $7 billion to counties and schools to offset the property taxes that they would collect on forest lands but can't collect on forest lands. This program is called the Secure Rural Schools Initiative. There's been nothing very secure about it over the past few years. Funding has been very fluid. It's been cut. There is no plan right now to fund it into 2019. And this is about $20+ million to schools and counties in Idaho, about $6 million for schools. And for some schools, like Mountain View up around Grangeville, this is a big chunk of their money. So, yes, you had Senators Crapo and Risch, joined by Ron Wyden, a Democratic senator from Oregon, joined by school officials, county officials from Idaho and Oregon. And what they're pushing is a bill that would create a permanent endowment that would pay out these secure rural school payments in perpetuity. It would take about a $7 billion federal endowment to fully fund this and to, in theory, keep these payments coming as they have in the past 20 years.
But in regards to their optimism, this type of legislation has been attempted before.
Well, and this whole program has been in so much flux the past few years, but the senators, and I don't know if it's just putting on a face, they are quite optimistic that they think this is going to happen at some point. Risch used terms like moral obligation. We have to do something for these counties and schools. You have to pay your bills. But this becomes a dollars and cents issue. The point that Wyden made in the rally was this: the feds have paid out about $7 billion since 2000. So this is really about the same as what's been paid out over the past 20 years. It's a one-and-done appropriation. It goes into this fund. It pays out the proceeds year to year. We'll see. But there was a fairly high level of optimism, which kind of surprised me, actually.
This has been such a fight over the years. And the program really began with some legislation that was referred to as Craig Wyden, back when Senator Larry Craig was representing Idaho. And it was to make up for lost timber receipts, because a lot of these rural timber-dependent counties used to get substantial funds through sales of timber on federal forest lands. And when that amount of logging decreased, their money dropped for things like schools and roads. And so this was to pay back some of that money they used to get, or to make up for its loss. And then over the years, there's been fights constantly to reauthorize it, to fund it. Every one or two or three years, there's another fight in Congress. So this is an attempt to put an end to the continuing fights over reauthorizing it and just do it once and for all.
And part of the push and part of the message that the senators tried to deliver on Thursday was a message of bipartisanship. As Betsy mentioned, This was Ron Wyden and Larry Craig who created this in 2000. We call it Craig Wyden in Idaho. Wyden kind of made the joke and said, in Oregon, we call it Wyden Craig. But the point being that you've got Jim Risch and Mike Crapo, Ron Wyden and Jeff Merkley, the four senators from the two states, two Republicans, two Democrats trying to push for this. They say that there is a chance because they have been able to get some bipartisan legislation through in the past as a team. So we'll see.
Let's keep the education theme going then. Governor Little begins a new task force beginning Monday. Tell us what that is.
Well, this is Governor Little's long-awaited K-12 task force. And what he's trying to do with this task force is piggyback onto what we saw in 2013 with Governor Otter's task force, which really crafted a lot of education policy that really has sort of dictated the flow of education debate over the past several years, whether we're talking about teacher salaries or classroom technology or even the debate now about how we fund schools and how we, draw up a funding formula. All of these ideas kind of grew out of that task force from 2013. So now we have a new task force. It starts work on Monday morning with a really tight deadline. Governor Little wants recommendations by November because he wants to take something to the legislature in January. So that's a pretty tight turnaround. It's kind of a point in time for Little where he can, craft some education policy and leave his imprint on education. Between the task force and the fact that he has two vacancies on the State Board of Education that he will fill in the next few weeks. I sat down for our podcast at Idaho Education News with Greg Wilson, who's Little's education advisor, to talk about this. I mean, this is his top priority issue. He talks about that all the time, the governor. He has a chance, to kind of affect the makeup of that state board and maybe get some new thoughts and new perspectives on that board. And, the task force, my suspicion, knowing Governor Little, he's going to have a fairly hands-on approach to this, either through staff or himself personally. I don't think he's going to sit idly by and watch the task force meet.
I think the two retirements from the state board are fairly significant. Richard Westerberg has been on the board since 2007. Don Saltman has been on the board for 10 years. Mm-hmm. Both are retiring and new people will be appointed. Westerberg basically represents southeastern Idaho, Saltman, North Idaho, but there's no requirement that the new applicants or the replacements absolutely have to be from that geographical area, although that has been the custom. And so it's up to the governor to select the applicants. He's opened it up. He's taking applications right now and he's expecting a whole lot of them.
Over the past year, we've really talked a lot about this vacuum in leadership when it comes to education in Idaho. And as Kevin said, this really is Governor Little's chance to make a strong imprint and change the direction of education in the state, especially as news came out a couple weeks ago that we're 51st on per pupil spending when you look at the states and D.C.
Right. I mean, 51st in revenue, 50th in spending. Either way, you slice the numbers. They're not good. And I was struck as I wrote this week about the Brookings Institute report about growth in Boise and growth in Idaho, questioning whether the growth is sustainable and saying that part of the problem for Boise and for Idaho is the education system.
And you know what's funny? So much of when we talk about education spending in Idaho, a lot of that really turned on a dime under Governor Risch in 2006. In his short time as governor, his fundamental changes to Idaho's tax system and how money is doled out to school districts, and now how many school districts are dependent on bonds and levies for basic operations?
93 out of 115 school districts have supplemental levies.
And so when you look at school funding structures, it's obviously a multi-layered issue. But that's something that occurred to me during yesterday's press conference as I was following it online, is that you have Idaho's senator, both of our senators coming together to say this is a moral obligation, when one of them really had a huge say in how education spending works now in the state.
Yep. He rewrote the formula. Yep.
Not the education formula, but the tax,
right.
how those tax dollars are doled out.
And that reliance on supplemental levies really quickly. I mean, when we talk about secure rural schools, we're talking about $6 million for some schools in the state, but not every school in the state. when you talk about that supplemental levy bill across the state, it's more than $200 million. So just to keep those numbers in some sort of context.
The previous school improvement task force under Governor Otter made substantial recommendations. And over the past 5 years, the state has invested hundreds of millions of dollars more into school funding. Yet at the same time, we have barely advanced at all in our rankings compared to other states because other states are investing as well. And we still, as a result, rank quite low.
We're getting back to the reporter roundtable with Kevin Richard with Idaho Education News and Betsy Russell with Idaho Press, Melissa Devlin with Idaho Public Television. Melissa, let's talk a little bit about whistleblowers in Idaho.
Yes.
There was a ruling handed down by the Idaho Supreme Court. It involves a case of a veteran of the Idaho State Police who successfully challenged his bosses. And a Ada County jury agreed with him and tried to give him significant damages. But then the case went to the Supreme Court.
Right. So backing up a little bit, the original conflict happened when an Idaho State Police crash reconstructionist was butting heads with some of his superior officers in ISP because of his findings in a 2011 crash involving a Payette County sheriff's deputy. He and a coworker found that the sheriff's deputy was largely at fault for a fatal crash involving a civilian who was on his way home and had nothing to do with the call that this deputy was responding to. And so he sued on two grounds, that he had received a bad evaluation and basically a demotion after he had butted heads with his superiors, and also about a new policy that they had implemented saying that crash reconstructionists had to destroy all drafts of their reports and submit only the final version that had to be approved. And so an Ada County jury, after he sued in 2014, an Ada County jury had awarded him $1.5 million. They ruled in his favor.
In damages, right.
In damages, right. And later on, a judge overturned that and reduced that to $1 million because they were looking at the Idaho Tort Claims Act that caps damages at $500,000 each because he had two claims, times that by two, it's $1 million. Well, it was appealed to the Supreme Court, and the Idaho Supreme Court, the justices ruled unanimously that the Idaho Whistleblower Act is more applicable in this case, which means that this could get a lot more expensive for Idaho State Police because damages aren't capped under the Whistleblowers Act. It could get more than the initial $1.5 million that the jury had initially awarded.
And the Supreme Court remanded it back?
Specifically for the damages part of it.
Okay, right. So that figure is to be redetermined?
Yes, yes, as far as I understand it. And this is significant because there have been a number of whistleblower claims against Idaho's government in recent years. And if the Supreme Court is saying in no uncertain terms that we need to look at the Whistleblower Act, which is more specific to these claims, as opposed to the Tort Claim Act, which is a broad general statute that has these caps, it could get expensive, not just for Idaho State Police, but for everybody who has these claims against them.
It's fascinating because he is still a member of Idaho State Police. He and his wife are still with the force.
You know, that's really interesting. I thought he had retired.
Nope.
That's interesting.
As a matter of fact, in his original trial, I mean, the top brass of the state police took the stand. And he talked about being sent to graveyard shifts, and basically he had an award-winning career, and he was pushed to the side.
Right, absolutely. And he was given other assignments that had nothing to do with his original career responsibilities. And so fascinating case, and, you know, as a taxpayer should be paying attention.
Okay. Betsy Russell, you have had a conversation, a more recent conversation with Paula Jordan, former gubernatorial hopeful Paula Jordan, who is now, I guess, a bit of a film star. She had there was a film about her campaign that screened in the past week up in Seattle.
That's right. So the documentary entitled Paulette, which was directed by filmmaker Heather Ray, an Academy Award nominee, had its official premiere at the Seattle International Film Festival. It was a 20-minute short that was part of a series of seven shorts, all on Native American themes. And It was well received. There was a standing ovation at the end of it, and Paulette Jordan did a Q&A with the audience afterwards. She also did a similar thing at the Sun Valley Film Festival in late March, where the same film, but an earlier version of it, a 15-minute version of it, was shown on the final night of the film festival. She did a Q&A with the audience afterwards, and there was a big hoopla and party. And I did speak with her earlier this week, and she really sounded like she was still running for office. So I asked her, are you considering running for office again? And she said she is heavily considering it. And
In Idaho?
And she said, I asked her specifically, and she said in Idaho. But her current project is she is launching a voter education campaign about salmon. She says saving the American salmon is her number one cause right now, and she wants to educate voters about it, and that people all over the country, throughout the Northwest, and even in Idaho, don't realize the habitat that's at risk in the Snake River. So she is launching that now. She's also hoping that she'll have a showing of Paulette at the Egyptian Theater, perhaps in July. And it really sounded to me like she's in the early stages of a future campaign.
But did she just leave it there? Just she wasn't specific as far as statewide or a congressional office? Or
so I did ask her. She mentioned something about 2020, and I said, gee, the governor's seat is not up in 2020. Are you considering running for Congress? And
right.
She said, oh, I have not decided. I've made no decisions. I am just looking to the future and launching this campaign. She's also been on apparently a pretty heavy speaking tour, targeting college campuses, young women who she's trying to bring into leadership. She's on kind of a big outreach kick.
Mm-hmm.
It was a really interesting conversation.
There's something called the festival circuit where films like this make the rounds. And I wouldn't be surprised if she's bundled with that because it gives her a pretty receptive audience, I'm guessing.
She also mentioned that Heather Ray is still working on turning it into a full-length feature film, apparently with the target of an hour long. And this is for The Guardian in the UK, which has picked it up and plans to distribute it internationally. So that's the length that they're looking for that finished product.
Hmm. Okay. Who wants to talk about a loose bear?
Oh, I do.
Who doesn't want to talk about a loose bear?
I am all about this loose bear.
Okay. Let's presume it's the same bear, but we know of at least four sightings this week in or around southeast Boise, everywhere from between Micron and the canal and the Idaho Shakespeare Festival, et cetera.
Yes.
I mean, there's a charm to this, but let's face it, it's a bear.
Bears are pretty cool, George.
Well, okay. And from a distance, I agree.
They're also kind of big and scary.
And
I mean, there have not been, although there has been some video out there, there have been no photos that caught this bear who's estimated to be about 2 years old. But the Boise Police Department did take a picture of its paw print, and it is larger than the officer's boot. So this is a good
size
bear. Apparently, a two-year-old bear is about 200 pounds.
Well, and It's so fitting that the bear showed up at the Idaho Shakespeare Festival because there are so many jokes we can make,
this is not a joking matter for me. I went to Shakespeare on Saturday night. The second act was rained out, so I didn't see how Taming of the Shrew ended. If this bear saw the end of Taming of the Shrew and I didn't, I've got grievances.
For the record, there was no performance the evening that the bear was there. I think it was Wednesday.
There's your right.
Okay.
There was no exit pursued by a bear.
Okay, so
Nate Brown said, I came to bury Caesar, not praise him. But in all seriousness,
we'll be here all week.
Thank you, everybody. This is going to get more and more common as Boise expands and that urban wildlife interface keeps getting bigger and bigger. We're going to have more cougar sightings. We're going to have more bear sightings. And people, I mean, you see this everywhere in expanding cities that edge up against wildlands. And we're going to see it more during fire season, the fire season that's getting longer and it's getting hotter. It drives animals into these urban areas. That's something we're working on at Outdoor Idaho, at Idaho Public Television, is looking at this this interface between urban and wildlands.
And hiking the trails the very same day, there were, I think, a coyote pack.
Yep, coyotes.
Right? And signs have gone up on the trails.
Mm-hmm.
Moms
protecting their pups. And so it's something that, I love being outdoors in Boise. It's one of the reasons that we moved back here. But, it's something that we're all going to have to be aware of. Just on the way here, I saw a roadkill deer on the connector, and that's going to be more and more common. And so, there are pros and cons to that, right? people are going to have to keep a closer eye on their pets, especially if they live on those outskirts of Boise. And it's just a reality.
Considering how many people are moving here, it's a new reality for a lot of folks.
It really, really is, you know, and it's something that California has been dealing with, especially with mountain lions, for a really, really long time. It's pretty common to have mountain lion encounters in California. So I think at this point there's got to be a lot more personal responsibility for people as they are taking advantage of, you know, even just bike trails in the Greenbelt, because this isn't going to be the last time we have a bear wander down to the Shakespeare Festival.
Excellent. Thanks, guys. This has been our reporter roundtable for Friday, May 31st. Kevin Richard with Idaho Education News, Betsy Russell with Idaho Press, Melissa Davlin, Idaho Public Television. We'll be watching and reading, you multitaskers, you. Thanks so much. And coming up, Kevin, you'll be pleased to know we're going to drill into Idaho Shakespeare Festival. And before this program is out, we're going to figure out how Taming of the Shrew ends.
Oh, good. I'll stay tuned.
It's Boise State Public Radio News. Stay tuned.